Welcome everyone to another episode of the Dine Sports Podcast on the Dine Sports Podcast Network. Today we've got a great episode coming your way. We're sitting down with friend of the show, Kyle Kirkwood from the Front Office Podcast, former CFL player himself, and we'll actually be talking all things CFL. We're going to start off with the hometown Ottawa Red Blacks and what is going wrong in the nation's capital as far as their on-field product as they continue to scuffle out of the gates in the 2022 CFL season. Then we expand our talks to the CFL in general, what the future of the league holds, and where the league needs to make changes if they want to continue growing the game and tapping into some new markets and fan bases. So, jam-packed episode coming your way. Let's get right to it. Sitting down with us today, Kyle Kirkwood. Joining us for another episode on the Dine Sports Podcast, we've got friend of the show, frequent guest, recurring football guru, the one and only talented Kyle Kirkwood from the Front Office Podcast. How you doing today, buddy?
Well, with that intro, I'm doing much better. Thank you. It was actually a rough day, but that just brightened up my spirits. But
there we go. We got a smile on your face now. You're in a good mood, right? We're going to talk some pigskin. What more could you want?
When you're throwing out words like guru and things, you know, I know you didn't say it, but like you were implying that I'm some type of savant. I mean, it caters to the ego very nicely. So thank you very much. Good to be here, buddy.
There we go. Now, we did throw you a curveball earlier this week. When we originally set this up, we said we were going to talk all NFL. And then there have been some developments, let's just say, on the not only home front here in Ottawa, but across the greater CFL as well, too. And you being that self-proclaimed savant there, which came out of your mouth 30 seconds ago, we wanted to switch it up a little bit, and we're going to talk football north of the border, which even as a Canadian sports podcast show, and we run a website and digital media and all of that, we're probably guilty of falling into that trap of not talking a whole heck of a lot about CFL football. Now, some of that's on us, and as we'll get into tonight, some of that is on the league itself. So we're going to start with the CFL discussion, maybe on a local scale here. And we put out some posts earlier, not only through the Dine Sports stuff, but also through the Front Office and even Dynasty League as well, too. The Ottawa Red Blacks are not doing so hot, let's just say, since they hoisted the Grey Cup several years ago. 1-19 currently at home in their last 20 games, and 7-34 overall since their last Grey Cup victory. Now, there was a very public falling out where it was kind of not unsimilar to what we see in Brooklyn going on with KD attempting to say it's either them or me, the front office or me. But in this case, it was a head coach and a GM here in Ottawa. And we are now kind of seeing the fruits, or I guess the aftermath is probably a better way to put it, of that ultimate decision. So, from your vantage point as a longtime supporter of the CFL, what is your take just on 2022, the Ottawa Red Blacks, the struggle that they're in, and how we got to this point? Because back in the heyday, this wasn't always the case here with this franchise.
Yeah, I think we have to backtrack a bit before we can analyze where we are right now, because obviously you have to know where you've been to know where you are. And the biggest thing, you know, and you kind of alluded to it during your intro to the topic, is the previous regime and what was apparently their inability to, one, coexist amongst each other, mm-hmm. which created, you know, not to say a toxic environment, but it's never a good environment to have whenever you have the GM and head coach who aren't seeing eye to eye and who are very quietly, but publicly, you know, at each other's throats. Mm-hmm. So when you dig yourself a deep hole in any type of sport, but especially professional sports, where you're obviously reliant on people performing at the level that you need to perform at, you're dishing out contracts, you know, based on what you've seen players do in the past and then evaluating what they could potentially do in the future. It's a really interesting game of chess that you have to play. And I feel that the previous regime, and I'll just highlight Marcel Desjardins, the previous GM, I think after that Grey Cup year, it kind of just got to a point where he was resting on a lot of his laurels that got him to that point. And I think ego took over to a point where, even though he knew what he had to do, which is move on from specific players, or, you know, try and reinvigorate the coaching staff with a couple of different people, or, you know, whatever it may be, I think at the end of the day, when people, when as soon as he started hearing people suggesting to him what he should be doing, he automatically just got his back up and said, you know, F you, I'm going to do what I want to do because I want us a great cup. Knowing the personality a little bit, that's probably what happened. So when you get into that point and you have multiple years of not doing what you're supposed to be doing, which is staying on top of, again, US scouting, staying on top of Canadian scouting, making sure you're working the trade wire as much as possible, bringing in the good free agents, not the best free agents, but the good free agents that fit your system, and working cohesively with the head coach that you brought in, that's how you maintain a level of success. You have to see things 5 years in the future and not look at things for what they are right now. And that's the difficult part of running an organization. So now fast forward to 2022, because of that lack of organizational stability, which was needed, they've thrown all this on the new GM, Sean Burke, who, by all intents and purposes, has done a great job at bringing in well-regarded, talented guys for good contracts. Mm-hmm. So it's not like he's just kind of sat back and said, oh yeah, we'll just kind of dig our way out of this. No, he went out and he was active. He brought in guys that he was used to from Hamilton. He brought in guys from winning organizations that came in. They've done a good job of bringing in, you know, some young, good American talent. And by all intents and purposes, I mean, the draft that they just had, they're bringing in local guys who have that affinity for the program. So that will actually allow them to promote the organization to the local fan base. Yeah. Like, shocking revelation. So when you look at where they are right now, I think they've kind of fixed one aspect of that, which is the general manager actually going out, being proactive and seeing things for what they could be 5 years in the future. He's making moves for today, but he's also making moves for 5 years in the future. We can get into it a little bit more, I'm sure you'll ask that question, but do they have the proper situation in the coaching side of things now? So yeah. We can kind of evaluate it as we go, and I'm sure that we'll go back and talk about the old regime as well, but that's fairly much where we sit today and how we've gotten to this position.
Absolutely. And I mean, there is a lot to cover here, and there's multiple, I guess, sliding glass door moments here. Obviously, anytime you lose your franchise quarterback, essentially to the season, to a pretty cheap, dirty play, which is still making the rounds in the CFL blogosphere. And, you know, why is this guy still in the league? And why wasn't there a longer punishment? Blah, 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 blah. But that obviously has an effect. But at the same time, too, as you mentioned, when it comes to the coaching staff, the decisions that they're putting out there, and even some of the longtime veteran reporters who, you know, it takes a lot for them to even question some of the decisions that these regimes have made. When some of these guys, who won't name names here, because I know some of them actually listen to the show, but when some of them are now starting to publicly question, like, why is this player currently still in there? Why haven't we shifted to this? Why isn't Arbuckle in? Why isn't, right? Like, when those types of things are now starting to get aired publicly, and you've got players on the team sounding off on TSN and anyone who will put a microphone in their face, like, this is a very frustrated group right now. So how much of that do you put on LaPolice and that regime that he's got in there versus, you know what, he's doing the best he can based on what the previous GM kind of put him in this situation. Burke is trying to dig them out of that hole, but it's not going to flip overnight. And, oh, by the way, we lost Masoli for the entire year.
Yeah, and I'll touch on that, and then I'll backtrack to the previous regime as well. But, you know,
what it's just an onion. So many layers that we've got to go through here.
You really have to peel it back, you know, a few times until you get to the actual answer. But when you start to lose local media and fan base, you've got no chance.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously, they've been very patient with Paul LaPolice, understanding that he came into a difficult situation, trying to dig Ottawa out of the hole that they were in after the 2018-2019 season, right? Mm-hmm. So, 2019 season, I should say. So at the end of the day, that excuse of he has to play the cards that he was dealt, that excuse was good for the first year and change, because obviously you come in, you're the Grey Cup winning offensive coordinator for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. You've got a brand name. You've been a media analyst before. You know how to talk to the media. All those things matter. And by all intents and purposes, he actually has had an innovative offensive system. You saw that by rolling out three different quarterbacks the year they won the Grey Cup and still being able to be competitive. Like, that's no small feat. Where we sit today, it no longer is an instance of, oh, well, he's just playing the cards that he's dealt. Listen, losing a great cup quarterback like Jeremiah Masoli is not easy. Obviously, you want to go out and get those guys because they're the ones who are going to win you football games and keep you employed. But at the end of the day, I understand trying to groom the young guy to the point of, okay, well, he's going to be our future. But if you're not going to be around for that future, why does it matter?
Yeah.
So, you know, they always say insanity is basically defined of doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. And I feel like that's what's been happening this season. Mm-hmm. They keep rolling out the same thing every week, and it's the same play calling. It's the same situation, the same guys going out and expecting a different result. And I understand that being a player, you know, at a high level, sometimes you just got to say, just stay with us and we'll get there. Where it's just bad breaks, you know, we're losing, you know, these nickel and dime games. Sometimes it's an interception or a late fumble, whatever it may be. Those things happen. I don't necessarily see that with this year's team. They have really good talent, but the players are not being put in a position to succeed in my eyes.
Well, it's kind of tough too, when it seems like every single time they get the football, it's 2 yard run and now it's 2nd and 8 and everyone's panicking. Like, very rarely are they throwing on first down. Very rarely are they putting themselves in a position to have short second downs, maybe even a third down that you can actually go for. Like, everything just seems to be putting so much pressure on these unproven quarterbacks who are, again, being thrust into a situation where they didn't expect to be starting at all this year, but lo and behold, here we are. You can't just keep doing that over and over again. So is it as simple as just a quick scheme switch and they can kind of turn it around? Because, you know, as much of a dumpster fire as the Red Blacks have been, there's still miraculously a path that if enough things go right, there's still a playoff team. That's just the state of the CFL East division this year. So is it a scheme, or are they just so far down that rabbit hole this year that it's a lost cause at this point?
It's not a lost cause, but at the end of the day, the problem is when you want the power of being the head coach and a play caller, it takes away the best ability of both. So you're not able to be the best head coach, and you're also not able to be the best play caller that you can be. So that's the catch 22 that always comes in. And, you know, I'll kind of throw them a little bit of a bone here, because what the CFL has done is they've mandated that coaching salaries are also capped now too. So you have to be very strategic with how you implement your coaching staff. That being said, I mean, if you cannot do both jobs, you have to give up control of one. Mm-hmm. Since you're a head coach and an offensive coordinator, you probably don't want to give up that head coaching role. So I would, if I was Paul Lapolice, I would absolutely be looking at, look, do I have somebody on my staff who can call a game? I will have input in gameplay calling, or sorry, in game planning. We'll make sure that it's my offense that we're running, but someone else needs to take the reins on calling that game and give a little bit more faith to my quarterbacks that, look, if you guys understand the system, you should be able to call the game as well, right? Like, you're professionals. That's where that ego thing comes into play again, because, and I've been there as a coach, you think that you have the best answers because it's your system. No one knows your system like you do, but are you paying attention to what the defense is doing when it's 2nd and short and you need to make sure that, one, the defense coordinator is rolling in the right personnel for that grouping? Are you paying attention to make sure that they're not running a special teams fake? You can't just put that all on the coordinators because they have a lot of stuff going on with a lot of moving parts. That's your role as the head coach. You're basically there, and as the old popular saying goes, herding cats. That's what a head coach does. You are you're the CEO of the company. You have to have your hands in a little bit of everything. So, well, I appreciate the fact that, you know, sometimes you get hamstrung because, look, everybody sees Sean McVay doing what he's doing in the NFL, but Sean McVay also has 75 assistant coaches that literally do all the monotonous stuff that a CFL head coach has to do, right?
There's not too many CFL, you know, body watchers that are making sure you're not wandering onto the field when you're marching up and down
the sidelines. And that's the thing. So, I mean, when you have that ability to take a lot of the other stuff off your plate that a head coach has to do, you can focus on calling plays. But again, you have to delegate. Look at the new head coach of Minnesota Vikings, Kevin O'Connell. He was the offensive coordinator, air quotes, for the Los Angeles Rams. But he was also right beside McVay. He's relaying in the play from the booth, and McVay's calling it out to the quarterback, giving his opinion on it. That's completely different than what's going on here. This is, I'm calling the plays. I'm looking at down and distance. I'm doing everything because it's my system. So there has to be a little give and take there, because if you want things to be different and you want the outcome to be different, it'll be very, you'll be pleasantly surprised when you bring somebody in to do that. And if you don't have that person on staff right now, you have to find a way to get somebody in, or else you're not going to be around either. And that's the unfortunate part about it. Cause I think that he is, by all intents and purposes, a good coach. He's just not able to do the best thing of both sides because he's trying to do too much.
Classic where you've got the star employee, you put him into a manager position, and now all the things that they used to be so good at, you know, like you were saying, they're herding cats, they're putting out fires here, they're doing this and the other. And now they further up the totem pole they move, the less close to the thing that they were so good at that they were doing before that they actually are, right? So it's so important to bring in the right people. And I mean, I've seen a few different iterations of the hashtags going around. I've seen everything from the classic, you know, hashtag fire Lapolice, fire Lapo. I think my favorite one I've come across is hashtag defund Lapolice.
That's good.
Yeah, I liked that one there. I thought that would get a chuckle out of you. But for this season, I mean, if you're looking into your crystal ball, let's just say they get, what, one more win this year or zero? What percent chance do you put on Lapolice still being head coach of the Red Blacks if they finish with one or two wins this year heading into 2023?
Should be zero. Yeah. I say should be because I have worked in specific organizations and I see how things are run. It should be zero, but that's common sense.
Yeah.
It doesn't run on common sense sometimes. So it should be zero. He still has a place in the league. Don't get me wrong. Like, I think any team would love to have him as strictly their play caller. But I think as a head coach goes, you need to have somebody in there who has a presence that's bigger than just X's and O's. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know we had this conversation, I want to say 2 years ago on one of your podcasts where we talked about head coaching hires in the NFL. And you look at what Dan Campbell's been able to do since going over to the Detroit Lions and the impact that a guy who's not necessarily a play caller by trade, but he's a motivator and he has a presence about him that just is infectious with a locker room. Do you see how the players react to everything that that man says?
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, that's the type of guy or girl that you want to have in charge of things that commands the room, that everyone will listen to and will want to go through a wall for. Because when it becomes X's and O's versus Jimmy's and Joe's, well, the Jimmy's and Joe's are going to win out, because if they're motivated, even a messed up play will result in good things if they're actually participating at 100% of their ability. If they don't get to that point, they know exactly what they have to do, but they're not able to do it. Well, it doesn't matter how good your scheme is. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. Well, it brings up a great point as well here too, because, you know, again, there's so many different factors at play that the average fan has absolutely no idea what's going on behind some of these closed boardroom meeting doors and whatnot. And as far as their CFL franchises are going on here. And the sad reality is it's not the NFL. It's not even the NCAA who have these deep, unlimited pockets. And if we want to get rid of him and, you know what, screw it, let's go out and open the vault and, you know, do a quick round with the boosters and hire some big name guy. Like, I would actually, I don't think I'd be able to find all of the salaries, but I would love to know, you know, if you take Nick Saban's $11.7 million that he's going to get paid from now until 2030, just in one season, $11.7 million, and you took every single coach, whether it's head coach, coordinator, strength and conditioning, specialty, whatever, across the entire league, like, I don't even think that it's even close to what Nick Saban is going to be making in 1 year, right? No. And that just shows sort of the scope of these things here. But you have to realize, okay, what we're putting out there to, number one, the fans is important, because you lose the fan base. Hey, it's a gate-driven league. If you are sitting on empty stadiums, clock is ticking on you on how long you can keep the lights turned on that place. Mm-hmm.
Unless you've got Maple Leaf and Raptor money funding your funding your team.
Yeah. The one glaring exception to the rule there. But I mean, they're not exactly a picture of a competently run franchise themselves over there. But we'll get to them in a little bit when we expand it to the entire CFL. But it really is, you got to sell it to the fans. You got to sell it to the players, and you got to make it a destination that people want to buy into that culture. You alluded to Dan Campbell. I've got some thoughts on Dan Campbell, but there's definitely no qualms about the fact that the players love him, right? Mm-hmm. Right. Well, guess what? The players love Doug Peterson and his ice cream scheme and shtick and all of that. It wears out eventually. But anyways, we're not going to go down that rabbit hole right now. We're talking CFL here. But it really does come down to the culture that you're building. And if you are continually kicking the can down the road of, okay, hey, it's all right to be mediocre. It's all right to go out there and have these crappy seasons after season after season and, you know, openly feuding front office, head coach, all of that. It doesn't paint a good picture to those free agents when you are trying to finally turn the corner. And it doesn't matter how good Burke is as a GM. Mm-hmm. If every single player who's considering putting pen to paper on a contract looks at the standings and looks at the headlines that are coming out of Ottawa, there's not a chance they want to sign with them. Like, there's no reason logically that the Winnipeg Blue Bombers should be the premier destination in the entire league. No one wants to go and live in Winnipeg. I love Winnipeg. The people there are super nice, but you couldn't pay me enough to live there. But the players are
I'm sure they could.
It would be a hefty check. Let's put it that way.
A few shekels.
Yeah, it would be Nick Saban money, that's for sure. But really, it is. Like, there's no reason that Ottawa, a giant metropolis with a nice stadium, downtown stadium, revamped amenities, everything that you would want, shouldn't be a destination, just like a BC Lions, just like a Toronto Argonauts, Montreal, whatever. But it's not the case, right? So do you think that a simple head coaching change, shift, and even shift in philosophy of, okay, Lapo's still the head coach, but maybe they bring in an offensive coordinator and he kind of relinquishes some duties, is that going to do enough to change the mind in players? Or is this something that we need to actually start looking at, tear it down to the studs, and whether it is front office employees there or coaching or just the general culture, it permeates more than just what LaPolice is putting out there in terms of X's and O's.
Yeah. The one thing you never want is to lose the locker room, right? Like, we talked about, you lose the local media and the fan base. Like, that's on the external factor. Internally, you never want to lose the locker room. And if a coach can show that they've got the support of the players in the locker room, things can be fixed. Those things are easy, or not easy, but they're easier to fix than if the players are like, we can't win with this guy.
Yeah.
Right. So I think what Sean Burke has done is actually implement a big culture change when he brought in a lot of these other guys from outside of the organization, which was not the case before. Right. So, I mean, when you attract a guy like a Jalen Acklin here, that's a big, big move. With Darvin Adams, like, those are guys who would never sign here in the previous regime.
No.
So the fact that you're able to go out and get those types of guys to come in and play here, that's already showing that Ottawa is just as good of a destination for free agents as anyone else. You just have to be able to go out and get them, right? Like, you offer someone the right contract, well, it's going to make sense, because, you know, compare living in Ottawa to living in, you know, Regina or Winnipeg. It's a pretty good option. That only goes so far, because, like I said, if the coach has lost any semblance of that locker room, he's done. The team is done. There's no getting out of it, because either you have to get rid of the coach or you got to get rid of all the players. Yeah. That's the choice of the general manager.
And you better believe that players talk, not just within their own locker room as well, too.
Of course.
So, like, the other people around the league are going to be fully aware of that loss of the locker room.
So it's very important to maintain a good level of decorum throughout that whole process, because that's really what's going to paint the picture for you in the long term. And when you look at the previous regime, that's what happened with the coaching staff. And not to say the whole coaching staff, but the head coach in general. He lost the locker room. And as much as you want to say, well, I'm not saying you in particular, but, you know, people in general that are saying, well, we should have kept, you know, Rick Campbell. How did he do his last couple of years in Ottawa, right? And you look at the uninspired play, like, at least when you look in the field now, you can tell the players are actually competing. Like, they're competing. Look at 2019. There was no compete halfway through the season in that team. And I know a lot of those guys, and they'll actually say it. Like, it's really hard to get up for a game when your head coach isn't a motivational guy. Because Rick Campbell, I don't know if you ever heard him talk before, he could literally put the Tasmanian devil to sleep with a 30-second anecdote. Like, he is as blasé as you're ever going to get from a motivational standpoint, but I think brilliant football mind.
Yeah.
But again, you have to have a balance of both. And when you're losing the locker room because of your personality, again, the X's and O's don't mean a hill of beans.
These anecdotes that you're pulling out in this rant right now are top notch, by the way. This is
coach speak. You know, yeah. you have to get those anecdotes and little sayings and whatnot, little quips, you know, all throughout the things that you've heard. But anyways, that's the biggest thing that you have to understand is that in order to build something up, you need to make sure that one, the culture is a good thing. And like you said, players talk. If you can establish that, look, we're bringing in these good quality free agents. We've had guys that have been here a long time. Because, I mean, I don't know. I know you've, you know, met and spoken with Brendan Gallagher before, but anyone who hasn't, if you can't come in and be a teammate with that guy, you can't play with anybody. Because he is legitimately the best teammate that you're ever going to have. And I'm not just saying that because I know him very well. He honestly is exactly what you want in a teammate. So if you can't come in and play in Ottawa with a guy like that as one of your captains, you can't play anywhere. Then that's on you, the player. So keeping guys like that around that are going to make sure that one, things are kept in check, and two, there's a level of, you know, openness from the players to the fans, to the media, to the coaching staff, to the front office. That's what you want to have. And I think with what's been putting out, you know, what's been put out in the field in regards to the product, like you said, the record speaks for itself. You have to make sure that if your record's going to be that bad, you still have some level of, you know, decency in regards to the players that you put in front of the media. Because again, it's easy to be frustrated and say, you know, certain things the wrong way. But when you're a professional and you have that culture where the players are going to go out and say, look, do I enjoy losing? Absolutely not. But at the end of the day, this is on us. We got to dig ourselves out of this. And this is how we have to do it, because this is ultimately a player's game and the players have to get out of this. So when you can have guys like that, who can literally take the bull by the horns and say, look, we're the leaders of this team. We're going to be the ones who are, you know, making all the waves, and then let the other guys do what they do, which is just play football.
Yeah.
Cause the last thing you want is for everybody to be on this podcast and that interview and that newspaper and that talk show. And then everybody has mixed messages, and it's like, well, so-and-so interviewed, you know, and said this, and then you're talking about this. Where's the disconnect? Because you know that media is going to tear that apart. So there has to be a cohesiveness in regards to, okay, even if we're losing, we have to have that culture that just sets everything aside of leadership and attitude that's going to attract these free agents and attract these, you know, good players that are going to be coming up from the States. So again, it's not an easy fix, but it's very doable.
Yeah. Well, we've been harping on the beloved Ottawa Red Blacks for quite a while now, but they are far from the only franchise and entity within the CFL that is in need of a little TLC. So just even broadening the scope a little bit here. I mean, there's a litany of factors that we could point towards right now, but the thing that has been making, I guess, the most noise in the quote unquote casual fan who might go to a game every season, or, you know, they'll check the box score of the CFL, but they're not a diehard, you know, I've been to every Grey Cup since 1970, whatever, like CFL through and through fan, really is the talk of, all right, what's the future of this league? Because if you look at the average age of a CFL fan right now, it is getting alarmingly high on that key demographic scale, to put it politely. And
very politely.
And they really aren't attracting, unless you are within the minor football landscape of Canada, and, you know, you're getting the chance to go out there and play an exhibition game at one of these stadiums, or, you know, hey, free ticket giveaways to whatever Myers Riders Football Club or Cumberland Panthers or whatever, and bring some kids out to the game. Like, you're probably not getting exposed to a whole heck of a lot of CFL action. Now, part of that is the product they're putting out there. Part of it is how they're selling it and marketing themselves. Part of it is the media itself, too, because outside of some less than 100% effort TSN broadcasts that they're putting out there, it's not exactly easy to find CFL highlight packages or talking head shows dissecting, you know, the stuff like that, or even CFL podcasts for that friggin' matter either. Mm-hmm. Even within Ottawa here, you can't throw a friggin' stick down the road without hitting someone who runs a Senators podcast. But like, how many people run a Red Blacks podcast in Ottawa?
Probably two.
if that, and they might even be employed by the team. Like,
and other than, you know, the Dine Sports podcast and the Front Office podcast, probably not a lot of full league coverage being put out there.
No, absolutely not. So the direction of where does the league go from here to attract new viewers, get in some younger people involved in the game, all of that, how do they brand themselves? It's all up for debate, because what, as you alluded to before, you can't keep doing the same thing, expecting different results here. They've proven over the last even 20 years, pretty much since we've gotten into the new millennium here, that what they're doing is getting worse and worse every year as far as brand promotion and product placement. The diehards will never stop tuning in. We're not worried about them. But at a certain point, Grandpa Joe, who's 75, who hasn't missed a Ticats game in the last 30 years, he's not going to renew his season tickets. Who is taking over his seats? Because it sure as hell isn't going to be his grandson. The future of the league, do you see, let's say, 15 years down the road here, are they still a three-down league? Are they just an NFL clone north? Are they aligning themselves with the NFL or the NCAA? Like, or are they still a complete standalone entity? Like, what is the actual future, you think, down the line for the Canadian Football League?
You know, I thought they had a very good opportunity to put an emphasis on not a rebrand, but a reshift in focus that would have attracted a different demographic.
It's when, not a rebuild, it's a retool.
Exactly, exactly. When they were in talks with the XFL.
Yeah.
Okay. Because what's the main, you know, revenue generator for any professional sports league?
Broadcast deals.
Broadcast deals. Where's the largest pool of money in regards to broadcasting in the world?
America.
Anyone who wants to say that the U.S. doesn't control the money and the eyeballs on TV, I'm sorry, you're mistaken. That's where you have to get into. And negotiating these deals where you have the odd game on ESPN 8, the Ocho, and all that kind of thing. Like
right after Corgi racing.
Exactly. Right, because that takes precedent, obviously. You have to be very naive to the fact that that will not give you a boost. Now, I know when the commissioner first came in to power, he instituted the CFL 2.0. And what that was is trying to engage other markets around the world by partnering up with different leagues to get a bigger audience and a bigger, you know, viewership, which is a brilliant idea in theory. Mm-hmm. If you could do that, you're bringing in roughly, you know, another 500,000 to a million eyeballs per country every time you go in and make one of these deals. That means revenue. That means worldwide exposure. That means different sponsors who are in these countries will say, hey, I like that product because it's new and different. I'm going to invest some of our money in there so that way we can get some of that Canadian market. That's how it works, everybody. So when you have the opportunity to partner up with an upstart league that's not going to, you know, again, threaten your livelihood with the XFL, why would you not want to explore that as deep as possible? Because they can say whatever they want. I know for a fact they did not explore that deeply at all.
They pretty sure we even put out a tweet or something last year or whenever it was, when the height of these talks were going on, where just Dwayne The Rock Johnson alone has something like 2 times more Instagram followers than every CFL franchise put together.
Yeah.
Like this is the type of exposure we're talking about here, people, where when he posts something, if he was putting a picture of him wearing a CFL jersey out there, that is getting eyeballs on your product way more than a concentrated effort from every one of your freaking franchises in the league putting out there some sort of unified version.
And not just that, look at all the brands that come with that.
Yeah.
You know, Terramana would be the official tequila of the CFL. You go everywhere, you have a little tiki hut set up where you serve tequila. And who, people,
Terramana tailgate parties, it brands Terramana itself.
Tailgate parties, it writes itself. You know, you've got the Zoa energy drink, that's the official energy drink. It's very simple to do if you do it the right way. Now, what I had actually proposed when I was, you know, working with a specific team in the CFL was, this is before the talks had even begun. Mm-hmm. But when that happened, I said, we should be engaging with the XFL. The way that we should do it is not have them play in our league and us play in their league, but you also just have the partnership where you each play your own individual league. So the CFL still does their full season. They have the Grey Cup. Everything's good. XFL has their full season. They go. They have their championship. Good to go. They have 10 teams. All right. The deal is contingent that we get a 10th team in Halifax. So now it's 10 and 10. At the end of the season, you do a home and home. So now the CFL champion goes down to play in the XFL with XFL four down rules. The XFL champion comes up here and they do a home game with whatever the CFL champion is, and they play Canadian rules with the three down football. Mm-hmm. Do you not think that a lot of Americans would check that out just because?
Do you not see how much coverage the NFL gets for someone not showing up for training? Like the Tom Brady not being at training camp has dominated headlines. Like the entire CFL would kill for the amount of coverage of, is Tom Brady on the Masked Singer this year? Is that why he left the Bucs training camp? Yeah. Like it's unbelievable how short-sighted some of these partnerships really are. And I think it does have a lot to do with the fact that, unfortunately, the CFL has kind of painted themselves into the corner of they're now so dependent on the few diehard fans that they do have who are God opposed to do not change a single rule, whether it's three downs, whether it's field, whether it's whatever, minor tweaks. Like, I will turn in my season tickets before I see a four down football up in CFL Canada here. Like, they're so concerned about losing them that they balked at the first sign of trouble here. And that's how that deal fell apart right from the get-go.
Yeah. You know, you obviously have to listen to your fan base because they're the ones who are driving revenue through the door. But to a certain point, you're not going to have a fan base if the league isn't around.
Yeah.
So you're absolutely right in the sense that when you're so dependent on something, the fan base and the season ticketers know that they've got these teams by the you-know-whats. Because if they don't show up to games, look what happened with COVID.
Yeah.
The CFL is one of only a handful of leagues that didn't operate.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't financially.
Yeah.
So when you have that situation, I think there has to be a town hall in every CFL city and just say, this is what the plan is going to be. We want to put it on your radar as our loyal season ticket holders and let you know that this is for the good of the future of the league that you love so much. We don't want to make wholesale changes to the way that things operate, but the way that things are going, we have to do it this way because with this, this is how much, you know, income gets pumped into the league, right? Because openness and honesty, best policy, honestly. Like when you pull the curtain back and let fans in to see the things that go on behind the scenes, like Hard Knocks and, you know, things like that open up, people love that. Mm-hmm. They love access to things that they would not be privy to originally. So when you include them in those types of decisions, guess what? They're going to be okay with it. They might come out and grumble for the first week or two, but guess what? When they're showing up, hey, brand of football hasn't really changed that much, but oh, look at all those extra cameras that are here. Look at all those sponsors that are there. Like, that's a better atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Right?
And you can't also just sit there and tell me, too, that, you know what? For every keyboard warrior that's out there saying, oh, I'll cancel my season tickets tomorrow if this were to happen, maybe 20% of them actually follow through on that action.
I would say it's less than that.
Probably. I'm even being generous here. But like, honestly, if you get Dwayne The Rock Johnson, the XFL, this whatever you want to call it, North American, like try and set it up that it rivals the Super Bowl because it's all of North America, blah, blah, blah. Like this giant event that you're going to go and penultimately lead up to. I can guarantee you way more new eyeballs are going to be coming in tuning into that product, whether it's streaming services, whether it's showing up at the gates, whether it's buying merchandise, tenfold more than would ever lose by going through with this. It's just the short-sightedness of, hey, we're just coming out of a pandemic. We've painted ourselves into a corner, and this is the way we've always done it for over a century, so why would we change anything, right? It's the most toxic sentence in all of business, is this is the way we've always done it.
Again, that will literally kill an organization with that mentality. I hate that sentence more than anything. So here's an idea for the partnerships department with the CFL. How many streaming services do you think bid on the rights to broadcast NFL games this year?
How many bid or who put in realistic bids? Because I'm sure there's quite a few of those little startups there that threw out a couple million dollar bids. But
that's what I'm saying though. How many bid? All of them?
I was going to say, anyone who's got a checkbook?
Yeah. Who got the rights? Nobody. Nobody got the rights because the NFL decided, well, let's just do this ourselves where we pay ourselves money when it comes to that. So guess what these streaming services are looking at doing? Putting any type of content on their service as possible. How do you think ESPN started? How do you think Fox Sports
covering volleyball of all sports, wasn't it? ESPN?
Yeah. ESPN started in the 80s by covering UConn women's volleyball.
That's the University of Connecticut, not the actual UConn women's volleyball.
Yes, University of Connecticut. For those that are listening
right now.
Yeah, University of Connecticut. That's how ESPN started. And look at what they are today.
Yeah.
So you would be foolish not to reach out to any of these independent broadcasters to say, we will give you exclusive rights to everything that we do, but we want a 10-year agreement and it's guaranteed money from you from this point to this point. And what does that do? It puts an influx of cash in the pockets of every owner to run the operating costs of each franchise. So they're not reliant on ticket sales as much.
Yeah.
Like, it drives me nuts. It literally drives me nuts.
Even smaller moves, because it would be fantastic if, you know, the CFL head office could just phone up Disney and be like, hey, put on ABC and ESPN Plus a couple of our games every year. And they probably would, in all honesty, because they're so desperate for content these days. But what is just such a smaller, simpler thing that would be free for them to implement that would blow their minds is literally the approach of, let's take some of the few micro blogs or influencers or whatever you have that are actually going out of their way to cover this, like Three Down Nation and, you know, some of these people who have engaged audiences. And instead of when we are, you know, YouTube live streaming, doing kind of like the Gronk cast or the Manning cast or whatever it is, oh, well, it got flagged and it got taken down for copyright issues and da 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 da. Who cares? Why don't you let them? It's not money out of your pocket for them to do this. It's YouTube and all the ads and the algorithm that they got to pay. So let Google go ahead and fund these things. But the amount of eyeballs that would be tuning in to listen to some of these guys, that the podcasters, the bloggers, the whatnot, they would rather listen to them than some of the schmucks that they trot out on TSN on some of these nights. Because honest to God, meet people where they live. People live on computers. They don't sit down for cable packages on a Friday night to watch CFL football, right? Like, they're on their smartphones, they're on their tablets, they're on their this, that. Guess what? Even if you don't get a direct cent from it, the indirect benefits of doing something simple like that will get more people to show up to games, will get more people to buy merchandise, will get people to do all of these things. Because guess what? When people are talking about your product, they're going to want to show up and do it in person. And what a lot of these blogs and all that will do is they'll even organize events like, hey, let's show up to the Saskatchewan Rough Riders home opener and we'll do a fan interactive meet and greet. And all of a sudden 500 tickets got bought overnight that you never would have sold otherwise.
Yeah.
And you didn't put an ounce of effort or sense or marketing budget or whatever into it. You just let other people run it and your product is growing and getting a whole new audience that you wouldn't have had access to.
Yeah, I mean, and that's an even simpler approach. But I mean, at the end of the day, why are you paying people to make decisions for the future of the league who obviously don't care or don't know how to do it? Like, that's the issue that I have, is that you have people in charge who seem like, whatever, you know, everything will just kind of operate the way that it is because they live in a day by day mentality.
And you can't. It feels like they're stuck in 1990. They're in the 90s of the league where this internet thing, don't know if it's really going to take off or not. Like, they're just so far behind on things that something like a simulcast or something like that is you might as well be talking Greek to them at this point.
Well, it's that, and even going back to the US, you know, talk, they're so stuck in that time where they tried to expand to the US back in the 90s, and that it didn't work. Like, that's 25 years ago.
Yeah.
It's 27 years ago. Get over it.
Yeah.
It's a different world we live in now. The CFL was profitable back then. It's not profitable anymore. So you need to be able to understand that and change things before the league is no more. And this is over 100 years of history that just gets wiped down the tube.
Yeah. So the penultimate question that we've been building to here, which we'll maybe leave on, is under its current leadership, do you see the CFL being in a better place a couple seasons from now, or a worse place, and now it's no longer, okay, we're going to ask the commissioner to step down. It's, you know, we're doing a full-scale sweeping changes, and we need a bailout just to make, you know, rent. And, like, where do you see things going? Do you think this current leadership group will be able to turn it around, or is it tear it down to the studs again?
Tear it down.
No.
Like, that's a simple answer, because it's the simplest I can get. I mean, I was a big believer initially with the vision, but it was just words.
No,
there was no action behind it. And obviously a pandemic coming in the middle of it doesn't help. But when you look at even the negotiations that he's had with the players, and he's a former player himself, keep in mind, it's been contentious every time, because he's not keeping them in the loop. He's not talking to them. And that's the, so I don't know if it's somebody or people in his office that are telling him to do that, but you know, people hate Roger Goodell more than any other commissioner, but the guy keeps getting rehired and rehired and rehired because he runs the most profitable organization in the world when it comes to sports.
Just a license to print money down there, which is so, the exact opposite of the problem that the CFL has.
So the problem, I think, with that is you can either make friends or make money. You know, you've tried it one way. If you want it to be what you need it to be, you probably have to look at it the other, unfortunately. But that's just the nature of the business. Because if you don't want to make those hard decisions that are going to take this league to the future and beyond, then step aside and let somebody else who will. Because that's what's really going to turn this thing around. And it's not just relying on the people that have been involved in the league that you trust. Obviously, that trust hasn't gotten you anywhere.
Yeah.
Because the league, like you were saying, is stuck in a time capsule and they refuse to get out.
Well, for those that are listening who have made it thus far, let's maybe put a little bow on it this way here. This has been a pretty doom and gloom episode. It hasn't been our usual, you know, butt slapping hijinks and whatnot that we usually talk about when you come on. But
you're the one who wanted to change up the topic, man. I was all set to be all, you know, sunshine, rainbows, and you just pulled
talk about fantasy football and all the mistakes I'm going to make this year. But the reason I want to highlight that is these are the conversations that need to be had with this league, and the reason we're talking about it is because if those conversations don't start getting had, like you said, 100 years of history is very much on the table of just getting wiped away here. And for those who don't tune into the CFL regularly or whatnot, or have the classic...
It's your fault.
You're the problem. You're why we're here. But for those who might have the mentality of, whatever, it's a second-rate league or blah, 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 like... All you have to do is talk to anyone who's ever played in the league. Like Chad Johnson just came out on a podcast within the last 2 weeks saying how he could not believe that the same level of talent up there in the CFL is the exact same in the NFL, except for obviously some of the star players, right? Like at the opposite ends of the spectrum, you're going to see some differentiation there. But overall, right, on a 53-man roster in the NFL, a lot of those guys might be fringe players on the CFL, and right, like vice versa. Some of the CFL players could go on there and be starters. But these are the types of conversations that need to get had, and the reason we're talking about it is because we want to see the CFL succeed. We're not bringing this up because we want to, you know, pile on this crappy Canadian product and hopefully it folds and the NFL expands into Canada and da, da, da. Like, we want to see the CFL succeed, but we have to at least admit here, and I'm really struggling to find anyone who will take the side of the CFL head office now. It's getting more and more difficult to find a devil's advocate, we'll say. But the biggest enemy of the CFL right now is the CFL.
Yep. And, you know, going back to the player thing, I 100% agree with you, because it's not because there's a lack of talent, people.
Yeah.
Look at the players that have come through the CFL since the 70s. And you'll be amazed at the big names that have come through here. Mm-hmm. Like, given my, you know, circumstance when I was, you know, playing in the league for the short time that I was, one of the best guys in the league would just so happen to be on our team in Cameron Wake.
Yeah.
Well, what did Cameron Wake do? He went from being a CFL Rookie of the Year, All-Star, you know, everything in the CFL to signing a contract down in the States, you know, in the NFL, and then going on to become a Pro Bowler.
Yeah.
And an All-Pro in the NFL.
Yeah.
So what he was doing in Canada, he was able to do down in the NFL. So like Kyle just said, there is not a lack of talent that's playing in this league right now. There's just a lack of direction.
Yeah. The sports business side, unfortunately, can't really separate the sport from business if you actually want to have a product that's going to be out there. And this is one of those cases where I think the suits in the boardroom might be needing a bit of a shakeup. So we'll leave it at that. Kyle, tell the people where they can see more of your super cheery personality and tune in and see
that. Well, I mean, again, I blame this on you because you made this last minute change. So I'll leave that at that. But obviously, we are part of the Dine Sports family. Find us on the Dine's Press Box at the Front Office Podcast. Again, weekly to bi-weekly conversations. Obviously, you know, family and work commitments fall in the way of having fun. But, doing stuff like this all the time, kind of taking a deeper dive with a comedic spin into the back curtain of sports. So again, what Kyle and I just talked about, these are the types of things that we discuss all the time. So if you're interested, again, support the Dine's Press family and go check us out exclusively on the dinespressbox.com.
Beautiful. Could have said it better myself. And for those that are listening, be sure to check out the next episode of the Front Office Podcast. We're doing a little home and home series here, so you get to listen to myself go over there and see how much of a voice I still have left after recording one podcast, having to do a full fantasy draft with you guys over there tonight. So check that out as well, wherever podcasts are found and streamed from in your household. And that's a wrap for another episode of the Dine Sports Podcast on the Dine Sports Podcast Network. As always, a huge thank you goes out to our guest today, Kyle Kirkwood from the Front Office Podcast. You can check him out at dinespressbox.com under our podcast network section for the Front Office Podcast. They're pumping out tons of quality content all the time, so be sure to give them a listen as well. If you haven't already, give us a 5-star review on Apple, Spotify, wherever you're getting this stream from currently. We got more great guests coming up for you next week. Until then, stay safe, everyone. We'll see you in a bit.